Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics.
Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Diana Deeney.
And this is Fred Shankler. Hey, Diana.
Hi, Fred.
So what's new? We ranted on customer service last time we chatted. So let's talk about one of the ways a company can recognize and do improvements for that. I think you mentioned something about a quality management system thing.
Oh, yes. Quality management systems. Well, you know that I spent a lot of years in medical device. Mm-hmm. And that's a regulated industry that requires quality management systems. And so does automotive, but not all industries require it. And sometimes companies decide they want to implement that for themselves. And so there's standards and regulations that they can look at for some guidance. But
there's even competitions, if that's still going. I think the Baldrige Award and
That's
one in what's the one in Japan? Deming Award, I think.
I think so. And I know that there is one. And I'm drawing a blank on the name of it too. But yeah, so there's a recognition that quality management systems can make a difference. And what is neat about all of those competitions is that you do need to apply and your application is vetted by a board of people that have been doing this for a long time. And the winner actually publishes what they did so that the rest of the community can see what they did and decide if they want to adopt it or not. And that's how the Motorola Six Sigma ideas came out to the world, is through one of those competitions.
They really focused on minimizing variability, and it paid off for them in so many different ways. And Six Sigma became a thing at that point, unfortunately. They don't exist much anymore. They're still a company, but not what they were. Florida Light and Power won it, and then like 3 years later went bankrupt. There's a handful of winners that focused on the process so much, they forgot to actually create products that were useful.
Well, I know a lot of the, you know, like the Motorola Six Sigma was really a management philosophy. And that's what these quality management systems can sort of turn into. But there's still standards, you know, you should at least have these kind of things or consider these things and when you're developing it. And for years, it's been a lot of risk-based thinking. You know, you should have risk-based thinking into your systems. And what does that mean?
Yeah.
So quality management systems are, I don't know if it's because of my medical device history, but it's something that I believe in. I think it's something that should be scaled. And what works for one company that won't necessarily work for another. But they are systems against which people can work and coordinate together to ensure the quality of their products and services from start to end, and make sure that the information is getting where it needs to go.
I've had different experiences with quality management systems, and the end goal and the best processes I've seen was when I was at Hewlett Packard. Most of the organizations had a very, very small quality group and maybe just a quality manager. Corporate had two people for the whole corporation. And many of the companies had a quality manager because customers often wanted to talk to the quality manager for whatever reason. Yet they didn't have any staff. And they said, well, who does the quality here? Says, the design team, the manufacturing team, the VP on down, and everybody involved in this organization is a part of that. And here's the processes and techniques we use and so on. They could have passed the ISO 9000 certification if they wanted to, and many did. Yet customers were like, well, you don't have a whole team of quality people making sure it works. You don't need it if it works. If it actually is useful for the design team to be aware of and create a quality product or a reliable product or product that meets customer needs, you don't need a watchdog. And it was kind of an overall philosophy is that if it works, it will be done. It will be incorporated into the fabric of your company. If it's done on its own sake, if you're, and I've run into companies in my consulting that have a QMS system that is a standalone document, never to be looked at except for annually when somebody says, we have to update it. It's just over there. Somebody else does that. We don't do that.
And, so it's the quality manual.
Yeah, it's the manual, a whole bookshelf full of binders. It was the same company I walked in and they were telling me all about all their process quality control, SPC type stuff and process capability analysis and blah, blah, blah. And, oh, I'm looking forward to seeing these control charts. And lo and behold, they're right outside the conference room on the wall behind glass. And it says, is this where you actually only have SPC charts? Oh, yeah. Aren't they supposed to be on the floor, which is you were telling me about? And he says, oh, no, we don't put them on the floor. It's too distracting from the operations.
The SPC charts were distracting from operations?
That's right. Yeah, it is.
I don't know.
If there's a problem, we don't want to have to shut the line down to solve it. So we once a month, our quality engineers, take the data and post these on here. And I started looking at the charts and like, you've got thousands of readings up here and none of them are out of control. And they went, yes, when we find a problem that's out of control, we solve it and then we remove it from the chart so it doesn't distract from our good record. And like, okay, let me go explore some of the other things you told me about that may or may not be true, because you had the big binder. And
now this is screaming to me that they need a better quality management system, because they're gathering some data, but they're not analyzing it well, and they're not using it to drive decisions for quality.
No, and or anything.
Or anything. So yeah, there's basics of quality tool use. Sorry.
Right. But they have been asked by so many customers, we want to see your SPC. And so they made it very convenient and clean and in a quiet hallway to review it.
Well, but, so that's where the role of a quality system can come into play is, how do they use that data? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be so prescriptive and nailed down.
10-20, take a sample. 10-23, write it down.
Yeah, you don't have to do that. But your quality management system should talk about like the kind of data that you're going to collect and who's responsible for looking at it, and when it's out of spec, what process are you going to use to be able to fix it? Do you have a non-conformance process? And then overall, there should be, management should be looking at this stuff I don't care monthly, quarterly, but look at what's happening with these measures of quality, because it is a measure of quality and how your business is running. Yeah. From the production floor to your call centers coming in to the customers, what they're ordering, to the kind of test failures that the designers are seeing during their development. It can all matter toward management decisions on if you need personnel, if the data is not flowing as it should, or if you need to make other strategic business decisions to maintain or improve the quality for your customers. Yeah. And that's where I see the quality management system can sometimes feel like a checkbox. But if you look at it that way, it's supposed to be defining an integrated system for you to make decisions, then it can be a powerful way for you to be able to do quality.
Well, see, I would add to that, it's not just for management to make decisions. It's SVC in its truest form is meant so the person on that piece of equipment where you're making the readings can make decisions right then and there.
Exactly.
You know, and call in support and, you know, other resources when it's beyond their capability to solve it. And it's a good quality management system enables decisions at all levels of the organization. And it mm-hmm. has to be routinely reviewed. Are we measuring the right things? Because I don't know how many factories I walked into that make circuit boards and they had a device that would measure solder paste after it came off the screen and was screened onto the board, and they put an SPC chart on it. It was an automated system and it would automatically show you the stuff, and they had the alarms turned off on them all the time. And they're like, nobody's monitoring it. Nobody. It's just kicking out a chart. You could look at yesterday's chart versus today's chart and everything else. And I said, why do you measure solder paste? It looks like your process is in really good control and your operators maintain the paste and temperatures and pressures, and it runs pretty smoothly. Yet they're not using the measurement system at all for any of their decisions. And it is, well, we can measure it here and it's automatic, so it's easy to measure here. All right. What part of your process has the most problems? Oh, that's down there, but that's hard to measure.
And
so we don't do SPC there. Like, come on. But it's the other experience I had is I was in a factory. I was a shift supervisor just coming out of the military. And the operation I was on swing shift. And it was the operation I oversaw, it was called spooling. So it was a cable, and some of the products were sold in 100-foot or 300-foot length. So they'd be spooled onto 100-foot reels and labeled and so on and moved off. And it was a manual process to spin it out because we had so many different kinds of cables and all these other stuff in sizes that they were doing it by hand. And the swing shift group, I have a theory that swing shift people just have to know how to deal without engineers being anywhere around, and they just solve their own problems. And they ran pretty efficiently, and they ran very, very well. And you know, once the crowd of R&D folks left the floor, you get some work done, is the way they expressed it.
Yeah.
And so they had a little bit of overlap with the team upstairs, as they called them. And they said, that's enough, 5 o'clock. They're gone. We can get work done. And so they had a way of doing it. And part of my routine or regular assignments and where I worked is sometimes I'd be on graveyard or I'd be on day shift for various reasons. And notice that team did things very differently. And there was kind of this talk of getting ISO certified at that time, ISO 9000 certified. And that one of the criteria was that the different shifts needed to do the same process the same way or in a very similar way. And so I was in charge of coordinating among the three shifts. Well, how do you really do this? Now, I had a bias because I was technically part of swing shift, so I thought they were the best. And my team liked that. Yet I put the three leads together in a meeting, and it was amazing that, you know, well, how do you solve this problem? You know, how do you deal with this kind of situation? What do you do here? And each shift had a unique, good way of doing it. And it was like, all right, let's experiment. Let's try this tonight on swing shift. And let's try this one and then experiment with this one and experiment with one. Which one do you really like that works well for all your systems? And out of the dozen or so different elements or our processes, each shift had two or three things that came together to make a pretty efficient, you could see it in the numbers, in the throughput of that station. Is after a 2-hour, 3-hour meeting, after a couple of days, cycles of just experimenting, we got together again for a couple hours and said, let's write it down this way. And all the shifts agreed that that worked better for them. They had engagement in the process. They had, skin in the game is one way to say it. They got to experiment with it. It wasn't a quality team, do it this way, not coming in and dictating to it. And then they supported that process. As new people came on board, they got exposed to it, what we did. And if somebody said, you know, what if you did it this way? And they'd say, let's try that. And they go around the three shifts and it, decide whether to incorporate it or not. Did it really make a difference? And they measured it through throughput and the quality of the product going through. That to me is a quality management system that's working, even though I don't think we called it that at that time. Later we did, is they got all the ISO 9000 stuff put together.
But that's, you know, that's a perfect example and of how to build it, because yes, I mentioned management oversight, making decisions and collecting the data. But you really do want to make it, you want to make it with people who are going to be using it, and they should have a say in how things get done. And that's so curious that, because I worked a swing shift in a glass processing business company.
That's why you're so successful, Dan. It's a swing shift experience.
And it's so, it's funny because I noticed the same thing that would happen. And I was a, you know, like a junior engineer, process engineer there. But so I would stay past when the other engineers would leave into the second shift. And yeah, there was this, oh, hey, the watchdogs are gone. Now we can really run these processes the way they should be done. and you know, it was a similar thing. You know, it was still good quality and everything. But I really like your approach, how, you know, you wanted to standardize on it or really, you're collecting the best ideas that all of these people had to make the most robust process. And you were getting buy-in from everybody on how it should be done or what the best ideas were. And then, you know, as you're doing it, you can make that decision. Let's do it this way. And if it's not working for you, you can change it.
Yeah.
You're not stuck with whatever quality management system you developed 20 years ago, just because you have it documented. In fact, if you haven't touched it for 20 years, at this point, it's probably out of date anyway. So
nobody knows where it is or what it was.
So it should definitely, it's really capturing how you do work there. And so that everybody is at least consistent. But you don't want to shoot down the new ideas just because they're different than what you've got. You always, that's a continuous improvement mindset, right?
I've seen some systems where it's so bureaucratic that if you had an idea and it says, you know, this is a better way to do it, and the whether it's on the floor in engineering, is, yeah, that's a better process. It was about the time email was becoming more prevalent across the factory. And it's like, why are we filling out paper? Why don't we send an email to each other? And we just did it. That changed the way we did that work. And it got updated instead of filling out form 8793 part 2 email, the stakeholders and that's what we did. And it worked beautifully. Whereas I've run into other organizations. This one, in the assessment I ran into, there were black market fracas systems. It was the company system for keeping track of defects and everything else was iron-fisted controlled by the quality department. And they were so proud of it. They talked about all this cool stuff they're doing, and they had all these reminders, and they followed up, and they set deadlines, and they did all that other stuff. And I went and talked to the electrical engineering team. They says, we hate that system. They're such a pain. You know, we got a job to do. Yes, we'll solve these problems. We don't need four reminders every day. That, yes, it's on the list. Go away. We're going to deal with it. And they would, quality team would come to their office. They would send negative reports to their management team. They're not responding to this issue. And it's like, I just got it this morning. I'm off site all day. Stop bugging me.
Oh.
You know, kind of thing. So they created their own fracas system with just the electrical team. And if it was something mechanical, they would had a contact over there, and they'd slip them a piece of paper saying, you might want to look at this, but don't let quality know. So the development team just would put occasional things up to the quality team system so that it felt like it was being used, and they would, but in stuff they knew they could solve right away, get them off their back. But the real problems they did on their own.
So that's why you called it a black market fracas system.
Yeah. And it was on a chalkboard. It was, you know, just by a spreadsheet someplace. It was out of sight. That's not what that is. And so the quality folks would leave them alone. And I thought, you know, that doesn't smell right. This doesn't seem to be an effective system for the overall system. So one of my recommendations was kind of, all right, quality team, back off. You know, let's figure out something that's actually useful.
Yeah, useful for the people that are running it, not for the people managing the oversight, right?
Well, they didn't want to do the oversights, but that was the system they developed, is to, you know, set deadlines. And they didn't ask anybody, when do you have time to solve this problem? When are you going to get the next step in? It was, you get 2 hours to do this, period. And then they get hounded if they don't.
Yeah.
Like, no, that's not right. I think we agree is a good quality management system is what you do. And it's effective. It works. And then process improvement is got to be effective or efficient. Efficient's the right word. Is if you need to change something, it doesn't take 6 months in an act of Congress to make it happen. It's if it's better and you're going to do something that improves your process or your throughput or the quality of your product, that's all great. Yet if it becomes burdensome just to change a document, then no, it's never going to happen.
Well, you know, the last time we talked, we were talking about customer service. Mm-hmm. And so now you had, in the example you were just talking about, you had quality and the electrical engineers. Mm-hmm. Working on their fracas system, and the electrical engineers had a way that they wanted to do it. So that's the internal processes of how people do their job. It is one layer, but then the other layer is what I started talking about. Is we were talking about customer service, mm-hmm. and how like the director, when the leaders of the engineering group had sat in on the customer service calls for a while, said this information is gold. How come we're not seeing it?
Right.
Well, that's when you can use that opportunity for the engineers and the customer department to work together to get that information, or to work together to, I don't know, make a better working environment, share information, all toward quality. And you can even think of it as quality of workplace. Yeah. what you're doing matters. What you're doing is filtering into the right people. So the quality management system, or if you don't want to call it that, just that system of customer information and engineering working together. You have to intentionally design that and talk about how you're going to do it, or it just generally doesn't happen. And then that's where you get these silo problems.
Right. That's right. I think part of it too is the documentation, and it doesn't have to be, you know, what's the right word? Or just... you remember, you've done this exercise, I'm sure, you saw it in classes. So how do you make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich? Could you write a procedure for that? You know,
oh,
and no. Somebody that doesn't have any idea, or pretending they don't have any idea, that makes a mess. It's got to be good enough for the people that are using it. And then by documenting it, it's clear enough, but not overburdensome, it helps you withstand leadership changes and process, you know, equipment changes or location changes, things like that. So you have a touchstone for the way we do things here. And it's not the other way. It's not right down the ivory tower. This is the way we should do things. And then everybody ignores it.
Yeah. And then if you get new hires or the new project manager, mm-hmm. or a new coworker, it's a baseline for them to better understand how you do the work that you do and who you talk with and where information comes from. And
that's a good phrase for it. Is it creates a baseline of how we do things here. And I need to talk to the customer service support people because they have this kind of information. Well, that's really useful, right? It instead of assuming that you don't talk to customer service and then never try to call them or get in touch with them.
And there's some other cases too where, companies want to start doing this. We're like, oh, but this, I don't know, for whatever reason, one piece is getting bought off or they're going to stop producing or offering these kind of services. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, that's 2 years down the road and we're going to give it to somebody else, a third party to do or something. You can still, there's still benefits of capturing what it is that you do. It could be for benefiting the next project or service that's similar that you offer. It can help you to manage whatever third party you're going to hire to be able to do that, to tell mm-hmm. them this is the process we followed and here's the intersection points. So it's also, yeah, it's a way to capture what it is you do, not to only to help you with your work, but also to help you with future stuff, with future integrations of other things, with adopting new ideas. You know, it's much easier to figure out the risks of adopting a new idea or trying a new thing if you understand your current baseline that you already have.
Yeah. Now it's, when you first mentioned QM, the quality management systems, it just gave me shudders of the dozens and dozens I've seen that were just harmful. Yes, that's the only word I can think for it. And yet in my own experience, it's not the document that matters. Is it what you do? Is it how we actually do our process? Once you get it visible like that, just writing it down or doing a flowchart, it helps you identify, well, what could be better? What could we improve? How do we make this actually useful for our organization? And I agree with you, it doesn't have to be called a QMS. If you're in a regulated area, they're going to come in and say, where is your documentation of your processes? All right, here it is. And they expect that name or of that system or that process.
Yeah, the terminology.
But I wouldn't open a book and say, you know, hey, ChatGPT, can you write me a quality management system for my glass blowing company? And it will. It'll have nothing to do with how you do work. Maybe by chance, a few things will overlap. It may give you some ideas of areas you hadn't thought of that you could improve. Yet, unless it's built in from the fabric of your organization, and I had one company saying, yeah, we're working on that, but the way we do things isn't right. And so we're writing down how it should be done. And like, how about you change the process? Oh, change is really difficult.
Well, really, those documents are really just capturing what it is you are doing. That's a confusing conversation for me.
It's sort of like we don't put SPC charts on the line because it distracts the operators. Okay.
Or your customer service and you're talking to them for 10 minutes and the AI says, it sounds like you have a problem. Let's go back to the beginning.
Yeah, we're not making progress here. Let me get you back to the homepage.
Yeah. Let's start over.
Yeah. No, it is a system. It can be very, very useful. Unfortunately, I've seen it like SBC and other tools that are checkbox at best and onerous at worst. So, it can be done, as we know. So hopefully you're listening to this and going, yeah, our management system is really efficient. I think the best ones are you have to think, oh, do we even have one of those? Oh, yeah, okay, somebody wrote down what we do. We wrote down what we do would be even a better answer. I didn't know that was a quality management system. Oh, okay.
If you have one, everybody should know that you have one.
I think one of the things I didn't mention earlier is that whether you have it documented or not, you have a management system. You have a quality management system. You have a way you do stuff and how you make decisions. It exists independent of whether you have a binder or mm-hmm. a document somewhere. And by writing it down, it becomes a vehicle to, I like your term, Diana, is baseline, how you can make improvements. Recognize where the glitches are. Recognize where you can have opportunities to say, if we do this, this, and this, let's try that for a month or two. Oh, that is better. Right? Whatever criteria you call better, and adopt it. Put it in your system. It's got to work for you. If it's just on the shelf and never to be opened again for 20 years, well, what's the point? Why are you even trying?
Yeah. And then, you know, if you do see that opportunity to try something new, like you can do it on the side, on the swing shift.
That's right.
If that makes sense. Or, I mean, just write out a plan. If you feel like your management system is difficult, just write out a plan and then execute it like a project. If you need to.
Yeah. Anyway, we could go on with some of the attributes and more horror stories. I think we get the point across here. So
I think so too.
Yeah. So if you're listening to this, you know, I mean, do you have a good system? And what are the hallmarks of a good system? And then if you don't have a good system, you know, what are the sticking points? And then we should really challenge our listeners here, Diana. So then what are you going to do about it?
Yeah, that's right.
So, you know, let us know. Head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. A couple of ways to get in touch with us. Diana and I and the other hosts are available through LinkedIn and our about pages. You know, we have a system for doing these podcasts, and I don't think it's written down, but it seems to work.
Yeah, you know, I hear the entrepreneurial gurus, you know, coaching new entrepreneurs, and they're like, you have a process, you need to document it. And even me, yeah, I have a process for my podcast, and I don't have it written down. I guess I need to practice what I preach in my own business.
Well, I know that Chris asked me a couple of times, so how do you set up articles with all the metadata and all that stuff on the site? And, or, you know, what is the editing that goes into a podcast if we need to take over the editing of it? Yeah, I should write that down, because there are a lot of steps when you break it, when you look at all the stuff that happens into it. I don't care which tools you use, but the images need to be this way in order for it to work, and why, and so on.
So, there goes
my calendar for the week. Thanks, Diana.
so we get it. When you're like, when you're doing the job and you're getting stuff done, it can seem like a big pain to just stop and record what it is that you're doing. But we promise it's worthwhile, and I'll resolve to get that done soon for my stuff.
I found it useful. Some of the processes I use, I do like once a year, once every 6 months. And I found I have to write those down because I don't want to reinvent it when I come back to it. Mm-hmm. And the podcast we do frequent enough that I'm familiar with it. Yet, like this summer, it would have been nice for me to hand you off the process or the hints and tips of stuff that makes it efficient, like dual track recording. And why that. Yeah. No. Okay. Well, I got to do it.
Yeah. Okay. So we've taken on the challenge we were giving to listeners.
That's right. Well, that's part of it. Yeah. If anybody wants to write a good process for how to do podcasts for speaking of reliability, let me know. All right.
That's how we started this whole conversation, Fred.
That's right. Yeah. No, I guess we better do it. All right. Thanks so much, Diana. Now I got an action item. I don't bother.
Yeah, me too. I'm writing it down.
All right. Cool. We'll check in with each other in a couple of weeks, see how we're doing.
Yeah, sounds good.
All right. Thanks, Diana. Cheers.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.